Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Go for a run, take a nap, read a book, show up for a friend? A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find out what matters to you, so you can do more of it. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/365 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/365.
This is 365 Sports, powered by Sikkim365.com.
Tim Brando, Fox Sports, who joins us with so much to talk to as well, about, as we always do. Craig Smoak, Paul Catalina as well. Tim, thanks for your patience. We appreciate your time. You know Scott Drew. We had him on last week, and he said he was at Baylor through and through and wants to win multiple titles here. There was a report, Jeff Goodman said, that he had confirmed with Drew that he's not going anywhere. Louisville was, of course, there was some smoke there, but I never thought it was legitimate. Your thoughts about the decision that really doesn't surprise any of us here?
Well, I mean, Baylor is a premium job, and Louisville has been up and down for, you know, a while now. And I don't think the ACC can hold a candle to the Big 12 right now when it comes to college basketball. And without question, I might be a little bit biased because we're just, you know, now I'm just one more season away from getting to come to Big 12 territory for some college basketball. So we look forward to it coming to Fox. You may have noticed we were doing some Big 12 basketball this past year, and I think that was just sort of a precursor to sort of let the league know, and the league wanted us to be, you know, somewhat involved in some Big 12 games here and there whenever possible on the women's side. And I actually did that Baylor-Texas game, the one that they won back in late December. So I'll admit to the fact that, yeah, I'm excited about coming back to the Big 12. And I had my time in the ACC and got a lot of contacts there, but I mean, this is an embarrassing day for them, the way Virginia performed last night against Colorado State, and not a good day for the committee either. I had the committee's back a little bit because when you have five bids stolen, there's really little they can do given the current makeup of the way the selection process is handled with the 36 teams and the 32 teams on the automatic bid and at-large side. But the metrics even for Virginia did not measure up to Indiana State's or St. John's's or Seton Hall's. So it's a bad day if you're Jim Phillips in the ACC and you're the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. I could defend them to a point, but that was a debacle last night at the first four.
Yeah, the football team would have loved 14 points and a half this year at Virginia. But
that was the Iowa Hawkeyes offensive version of basketball.
It was. Tim, why do the power brokers in college basketball not understand that the tournament is as perfect as it can get and they can't keep their beefy mitts off of it?
Meaning we're going to go to 80? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, they're talking about expansion. They're doing all this. I mean, last night proved that expansion's probably not the best thing.
No, but it's going to be the only thing because, you know, they're going to be these commissioners and these athletic directors of these schools that were left out, okay, whether you're in the Missouri Valley Conference or the Big East, okay? Big East was the second-best league in America this year. Only the Big 12 was better. But because they had three teams, all with similar resumes, all hovered around either in or just outside the bubble, they all got hammered. And that's one of the reasons why I was not critical when, you know, even Patino said what he did about the net. Listen, he didn't say that college basketball's selection process was fraudulent. He said the net was fraudulent. You know, and yet some people were going off on Rick. That was a little bit like people going off on the bloodbath statement made by Trump. We know he was talking about the car situation. He wasn't talking about a bloodbath. I mean, the same thing is happening in sports now with the media. They go after fraudulent coming from Patino's mouth. He was talking about the net. The net was supposed to be irrefutable. It was supposed to replace the RPI, the ratings percentage index, and really offer us all the answers we need. You can talk to Scott, you can talk to any college basketball coach or the SIDs of any of these schools, and every time a broadcast team would come in, we would be double-checking with them, where are you in the net? Yeah, that's the number one question during the course of the regular season. The net clearly didn't mean as much, because had it, I think Seton Hall and St. John's probably would have been in, Virginia would have been out. But, you know, this is the way the politics works. To your point, I don't want to go to 80 any more than you want us to go to 80. But this is how it all works. Okay, Sankey's behind it. You know, he's going to get Petiti to get behind it, and we're going to go to 80. I'm just mark it down. That's going to happen. I'd rather see the regular season move back. I would rather see the conference championships be more meaningful, which clearly they were, right? Teams, they had to pay attention this year to what happened in the conference championships because there was so much bid stealing. Okay, when NC State did what it did, Oregon did what it did. So on the one hand, it was a good thing, but it was a bad thing because right now that just gives those people you're talking about the ammunition to get what they want, and that's expansion to 80.
Tim, you've covered so many different events, and so I could point to probably any month on the calendar and say what kind of memories come flooding back. But with March and March Madness and college basketball, does this time of year bring back some special memories for you and kind of what comes to mind?
Oh, my God. I mean, there's so many. Buzzer beaters that I will always remember, and you'll see them pop up on those on the X or Twitter, if you prefer still calling it that, where they look back on this date in, you know, or 2008, on this date in 1998, this date in 2003 or four. I mean, there are so many of them. You know, Tom Izzo is, you know, he's had 8 Final Fours, 12 Sweet 16s, and now, what is it, 26 consecutive NCAAs, and I've had a couple of his great runs, including that great buzzer beater to go to the Sweet 16 when they beat Gravis Vasquez in Maryland. I want to say that was in the 2009, maybe 10 season, might have been 2010. And Corey Lucius hit the shot, and if Draymond Green throws the ball with 2 seconds left and almost hits Delvon Rowe right in the head. Rowe was smart enough to duck because he didn't want to shoot it. But the little guard, Corey Lucius, who the following year transferred to Iowa State, hit the shot to get them into the Sweet 16. They went on to the Final Four yet again. You got to have moments like that for it to happen. In 2008, right after the tornado hit the Georgia Dome in the middle of our broadcast of the SEC tournament. The following week, we were assigned to Tampa, and Mike Jaminski and I went in there for the first and only time in the history of the NCAA tournament. The teams that were lower seeded, that were wearing the darker uniforms, that were at the same bench, won every game. There were literally, according to the seeds, upsets in every game. It started with a Ty Rogers shot from almost half court to beat a 30-win Drake team. It continued with San Diego, with only about 2 or 3 seconds left, winning their game against fourth-seeded UConn. That was Jim Calhoun's team that lost that game. It would later go on, as you know, the following year to be a favorite and lose to Michigan State in 9 in Detroit in the Final Four. But they were a hell of a team just a year away. They got knocked out in the first round at that site. Villanova was making its run with those great guards. And, they took down a Clemson team that a lot of people thought was maybe the best Clemson team to get in the tournament in forever. And Siena, McCaffrey was coaching them at that time, beat a Vanderbilt team that had been impressive all year. One of the last really good teams Vanderbilt ever had. So those four teams all won, and that was memorable to say the least. But the 98 regional final in St. Louis with Al McGuire is the one I'll always remember and treasure the most, because it was the first time I got a chance to punch a ticket for a team all the way to the Final Four. And I was working with the great Al McGuire, seashells and balloons, passing out toy soldiers to people, including me. And I was working really with the last great icon of college basketball analysts that I dreamed of working with. You know, I grew up watching Al win a national title when I was 21, then go to NBC, work with Enberg and Billy Packer. And, of course, I'd already worked with Billy Packer. I'd already worked with Bill Raftery and Dick Vitale. So, you know, Al was the cherry on top for me to get a chance to work with him. And we lost him only about 3 years later. So, to have that on my resume and to have that memory of, you know, really the last month of the season spent with the great Al McGuire, I'll never be able to equal that, no matter how many great games I have in my future and how many Hall of Fame analysts I have the opportunity to work with.
I'm glad you went there, because I saw on your Twitter feed announcer schedules, and 20 years ago, CBS, Lundquist, Harlan, Nance, Ian Eagle, Gus Johnson, Dick Enberg, Brando, Craig Bowlerjack. I mean, right. And that doesn't include the greatness of, as you mentioned, Rafferty, Packer, others.
Yeah, we had a lot of depth at that time. And the only reason I lost the second weekend was because we got the NFL back on CBS in 97 and 8. We were without the National Football League. They had lost it to Fox in 94. And I didn't join up until 96 at CBS. But those opportunities were created because people like Dick Stockton, Summerall, and a lot of other talent had left and gone to Fox. And Enberg was at NBC still. He had just done the Super Bowl in 97. And, for NBC. Then they lost the AFC package that right after that. And by 99, Enberg was joining CBS. Byrne was coming back from Turner, where he had gone after CBS had lost the NFL. And so, you know, we're talking two Hall of Famers right there. And my position in the fourth hole was demoted back down to, I think it was sixth or seventh at that particular time. And Gus had not yet emerged. Gus emerged right around that time, and he started getting all these great games. I think I had the 16-1 game in 96 when Western Carolina had three looks at beating a number one seed Purdue at Albuquerque. And as great as that game was, and it was off the charts good, at the very same time that my game was going on, Gus had Princeton's upset of the defending national champion Bruins of UCLA. And I want to say that was being played in Indianapolis in a packed house at the Dome. I was at the Pit in Albuquerque. And it was just, you know, I probably had as many great moments as just about anybody in the early rounds and in the Sweet 16. except Gus. Gus had just an inordinate number of great games, and he became an internet cult hero. It really built his career. It really did. He and I have talked about it often. So I think he's probably if you ran a poll of which CBS announcers on the NCAAs you missed the most, Gus would be at the top because he had so many great finishes. I'd be somewhere in that neighborhood. Probably some people would mention me, but Gus had just an incredible number of upsets and big time games during that same period.
Tim, you mentioned Billy Packer. He was to fans very controversial because he was unabashedly himself during a broadcast, which is what makes broadcasters good most of the time. What was it like being, did you enjoy being next to someone who was controversial?
Oh, God, yes. Are you kidding? Yeah. It took the heat off me. Because by play-by-play standards, I think you'd have to agree I'm controversial. I'm not just a time and temperature, just all the game jack guy. I'm a guy that hopes to elevate the guy that's working with him by saying what's obvious. You know, if I'm calling a game and I see a defensive change to, full court 2-2-1 pressure, I'm going to say that. All right. I'm going to say that. Now some might say, well, that's for the analyst to say, no, I'm calling the game. I see what they're doing in real time. I'm going to say it. So what does that mean? It means the guy working next to me, whoever he is, it could be Mike Jaminski for 10 years. It could be Dan Bonner. It could be Al McGuire, whoever. If I say that, then that means they got to tell me something else. They got to come up with a reason why they went to the 2-2-1 zone press. They're supposed to be the why guy. I'm the fact guy. I say what I see guy. So I see that, I say it, and now they got to tell me what the effects of that 2-2-1 are or why did they go to the 2-2-1 zone press, and that makes the analyst a better analyst. Now, that's just the way I do it. It's not everybody's cup of tea. And when I say that, I don't mean just the viewer, but sometimes the executive that's making the business, making the changes with the announcers. And maybe he would prefer I did keep my mouth shut and let the analyst say that. But I've always tried to elevate the role of the analyst, make that analyst better. And I think that if I say 2-2-1, then it's up to the analyst. He's now cornered. He's got to tell me why, not just that they're in it. If the analyst just says they're in it, then what is he really telling us? I want to know why they're in it. And so if I say it, then they're going to have to incorporate why when they react to what I'm doing. And if there are issues that are taking place both on the floor or just a reaction to this or that call that a player or a coach might make, if I see or hear something, I'm going to make a comment on it. I'm not just going to disregard it. And what we do is subjective. And as I said, some people prefer maybe less being more. And I try really hard. I do think I talk less now in my games than I did 30 years ago or even 20 years ago. But when I do say something, I think I'm saying it because I feel like you need to know it.
Tim, we saw the note last week about the college football playoff, the payout, the distribution. Yeah. I think everyone kind of knew this was coming. And yet when you see the numbers themselves, and I know Washington State, Oregon State got a bump from what was reported to like $3.5 million. But were you surprised by some of the differences in the percentage from the SEC Big Ten dropping to the ACC and then the Big 12?
I'm a little surprised by a lot of things, fellas. I mean, I am. Full disclosure, I'm a little surprised and maybe a little disappointed that based on the reports we see, it appears that the so-called sub-licensing or selling off of some of these games from ESPN to other networks, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And it looks like they're going to carry all of it. Okay, I don't think that's in the best interest of college football. That's my opinion. I don't speak for anyone at Fox other than myself. I think in the aftermath of the way this past year's college football playoff was handled or mishandled, I think America really wanted to see more than just one carrier for the college football playoff. And based on the reports we're seeing, okay, all of them, frankly, coming from the worldwide leader, that they're going to have it all. So I congratulate them. Good for them. But I, frankly, just from the outside looking in, I don't know how in the world they plan on making money with it. Not based on $50 million per game, and with a lot of those games being in the month of December, opposite NFL playoff games, NFL regular season games. It's going to be a very crowded universe. And whereas if you had more than one carrier, for the convenience sake of that of the different networks that could be involved, whether it was the one I work for or NBC or CBS, you could tailor it more appropriately so you could maximize your audience. I think that when it's just being one, you got an issue. And that's even with them having, ESPN2, news, all the other different platforms that they have. So I'm surprised by that. And again, good for them. But I'm a little disappointed for college football because I think it would have been, really a very good for the sport to have a blueprint similar to that of the NFL where multiple networks are involved and everybody's talking about it as opposed to, one carrier. As for the money distribution, I did see this happen. I think last time I was with you guys, I was shouting down the notion of a guaranteed three. That you had to have a guaranteed three spots for the Big Ten and the SEC. I thought that was something that maybe their presidents were forcing the commissioners of the SEC and the Big Ten to do. It just made no sense. Public relations-wise, it just looked bad. And I noticed that they backed off of that. They shouldn't be guaranteed because the metrics alone will get them three in. There's no sense in rubbing everybody else's nose in it by saying they're guaranteed three or that the ACC is guaranteed two. So I think they did back off that, which was good. As for the revenue distribution, they hold the cards. The SEC and the Big Ten hold the cards, and they earned that with the leverage that they were able to create. But I'm hoping because, something about our business that never changes has changed. So I'm hoping that sometime between now and that deal being executed, whenever that happens to be, I hope that they find a way to see it through that 14 is not where you want to be. You got 2+ years to figure out that if you want to make the money that you think you want to make and you want your partners to be happy, you need to go to 16 and you need to have more than one carrier involved. And that can be through sublicensing. It can be through whatever. But I think that would be the way to go. And not have two teams getting buys. We just, the 14-team idea, because they could go to it and they could probably do it and be able to afford it with one carrier. I think that's what this was about. Let's go to 14 and then we can hold all of it ourselves. I think that's foolhardy. I think going to 16 and going to 16 now with the understanding that you're going to be at 12 for the next 2 years, and then by the time you get to 16, maybe it becomes more consumer friendly for the partners, the network partners, because now I just think that's a lot of money to be paying for games involving teams that probably lost three games, in that opening round. I think that's potentially problematic. But again, there's a lot of time between now and then. And as I said before, I only speak for myself, not for the company I work for.
Tim, what is the end game for the ACC now that Clemson has joined the lawsuit fray?
God, man. Well, the wheels are going to be turning, and I think that what it really means is by the time we get to that point in 2 years, in 2026, I think it means the landscape's going to be a lot different, fellas, okay? Brother Smoke and Catalina, trust me when I tell you, I think that's where we're headed. Okay, I think that you're going to see those members in the ACC, like North Carolina, like Virginia, potentially Miami, but certainly those two, Carolina and Virginia, without a doubt. You're going to be seeing them heading to the Big Ten. You're going to see Florida State, Clemson, maybe Miami. We'll see. Miami could go either way, I think, headed to the SEC. I just see trouble. And then you're going to have Stanford and Cal trying to find a home again. Because how do they fit into an ACC that's just when they thought they were expanding, they might be imploding? That's what it looks like to me. It all comes back down to what happens with the lawsuit. And Clemson now sees that Florida State's lawyers are thinking that they can get what they need to get done. That does not bode well for the future of the Atlantic Coast Conference.
So you watched some Big 12 games. As you mentioned, you did the game when Baylor was down early and came back to beat Texas, and they dig themselves a hole, it seemed like constantly Baylor does. Both teams were in the tournament. Both have been somewhat erratic. Texas has a bunch of playmakers, you would think, with a lot of experience. Your thoughts about either one of those teams as they enter the tournament?
Well, I think that the problem that both these teams have is the draw. You know, I do like – we're talking about the men, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because the game I had that I think you might have been referencing was the women's game.
Okay.
In Texas. That Baylor won at Texas, by the way. And let me just tell you now, on the women's side, that's the overlooked team. On the women's side is Texas, okay? I think that team could go all the way to the Final Four, maybe even win it, the way they've been playing of late. But on the men's side, the problem I see for Baylor is they're on the same side of the bracket with Arizona. And eventually they're going to have to play them. I do think they can get to the second weekend. I like that. And I think that that's good for Scott. And his team has got the firepower, in my opinion. And if their defense can stay where it's been, continue to improve, I think they'll be all right. Texas, in my mind, is just there. I don't like their draw, and I think they're probably going to be bounced pretty soon in this year's NCAAs. The Big 12 has got a lot going for it, and it's got a lot of teams that could be. And maybe I'm wrong. Let me tell you. When it comes to this thing, I mean, you're better off talking to somebody that's picking teams based on how good looking the coach or what color uniforms. They prefer. You know, my wife could probably beat me right now by the end of the week on teams she's got left in her bracket versus me. But I just think this thing this year, fellas, is set up for an incredible run of retribution and redemption from the committee snubbing the Big East of their three teams that should have been in that weren't. And the three teams that are left all got great draws, with the exception of UConn, with the four conference tournament champions on their side. Iowa State's got a great shot. Illinois's got a great shot. Auburn's got a great shot. But I don't think any of them can beat UConn. I think UConn doesn't care who they play. They prefer being in Brooklyn and Boston than any place else, and they'll take on all comers. But I think Arizona's in a great position to get through. I like Michigan State to get to the round of 16. I think Izzo's going to do it again in the opening weekend and get to the round of 16. Before they have to play Arizona. And the other team I've got, I think UConn, Creighton, and Marquette are going to the Final Four. I think we're going to see three Big East teams in the Final Four. I love Creighton's draw because with Ryan Kaltbrenner, they've got exactly the right guy to defend Edie without having to give help. And with Tyler Colet coming back to Marquette, I think that's a problem for Houston because with Colet, now Cam Jones can go back off the ball. Colet can run his pick and rolls with Oso Iguodaro. And you look at guys like Chase Ross and Ben Gold and all these other guys that can really stroke it. I think it's going to allow them to go back and play the way they want to play. And Sean Miller's a hell of a coach. So that's my big splash with my tournament selection, is that I like all three Big East teams that are conveniently a 1 seed, a 2 seed, and a 3 seed, all making it to the big dance in Arizona.
I do have UConn and Creighton. Creighton, of course, who knocked Baylor out last year. I have both of them.
That team basically was 1 second and one bad call away from being at a Final Four for a second straight year. So they know, you know, how to navigate it to a point where they can get to the Final Four. They had to get used to not having Ryan Nembhard at point guard. I think they have the Ashworth kid along with Trey Alexander. And listen, Baylor Shireman could have, maybe even should have been the Big East Player of the Year. That kid is a stud. And I think Purdue's going to have all kinds of problems trying to defend all those outstanding scorers that Greg McDermott has. I think Matt Painter deserves to go to a Final Four. I wanted them to go to a Final Four. I think Lance Jones was a great addition. Braden Smith's played great, but I don't think they've got the firepower, if Creighton is playing their game, to beat them.
Tim, somebody in the chat room just asked this question because we have you on video, and it's great to do that, and all the stuff you have in the background. I've asked you about it before. Do you remember, or is it impossible to remember, one of the first collectibles you ever started putting in your office behind you?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the stuff is personal stuff
right. That
I've acquired over time, gifts, things that were given to me. But like, for instance, I'm going to show you this real quick. This is I was doing a fundraising speech at Western Georgia. An old coach named Ed Murphy that coached at Ole Miss had me come and speak. He was the athletic director there. And that's in right off of I-20 near LaGrange, Georgia. And so I'm at a silent auction. And at this silent auction, there was an Islamic prayer book. Now, you're going to say, Brandon, what is a guilty Catholic doing with an Islamic prayer book? Well, I got it because it was a silent auction. No one had bid on, and it was signed by Muhammad Ali.
No, okay. Okay.
And, I mean, I got it for, like, next to nothing. It was, I got to get this. And, of course, as time went on, I actually kind of looked at it a few times, you know. I'll never forget, I told Chris Jackson, the former LSU player, now Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, I said, I picked up a Islamic prayer book, and he told me something about it, and so I looked at it, and I learned a few things. So that's one. But I think the one that might impress you the most, let me grab it, okay?
Yeah,
and I did get it, and I got it at a celebrity golf tournament that was connected to the Jimmy B.
Okay.
In North Carolina, and so they had an auction. I wanted to make a contribution to the foundation, so you know I got it. And maybe because I'd done the NBA playoffs, it was during that period, you know, when Jordan was coming back, when Michael was coming back after Houston had won those two NBA championships with the Dream Shake, and Kenny Smith and those guys had won back to back years in '95 and '96, if memory serves me correctly. So I got this. Let me grab it.
All right.
You don't. It's hard to find one of these. Just for you, Smoke.
Oh wow! Holy smokes!
Yeah.
And when you get one of these, and I got one of these, it was a thrill because I got to call his games in the NBA and. And all, the second buzzer beater he hit when he returned, wearing the number 45, not 23,
right,
was over Steve Smith and the Hawks.
Wow!
And I made the Sports Illustrated Year in Review with my call of that shot. So I have a warm place in my heart for Jordan. So
well,
there you go.
A lot of people do. Well, we have one follow-up question. If you had to move, which I know you don't want to, but if you had to move, who would take longer to pack up their stuff? Your office?
Wait a minute.
We are family.
I got a question about this. This was given to me when I was calling Braves games by Phil Garner, when he was managing the Astros, and Scrap Iron's a friend, and I had told him that I played in high school with uniforms that looked just like his, black and gold, just like the Pirates. And so the next time I went in there, he had this for me, and he signed it.
Man, that was we are family, I guess, back with Star Trek.
We are family when it's sitting down, yeah.
Absolutely. So if it took you a time, if you had to move, who would have the room that would take the longest to pack, yours or something that is your wife's favorite room?
Oh, mine. Not even close. I'm the high-maintenance one in our family. She's very low-maintenance. You know, she's the practical one. It's kind of a role reversal,
yeah,
you know, with us. So She's like, oh, Tim, you don't need that. Oh, yeah, honey, I got to have that.
Yep.
Well, that's kind of the way we roll. When it comes to sports memorabilia, I'm really that way.
Tim, as always, thank you for a trip down memory lane with March Madness and everything else in between, the opinions on all the other things that continue to go on in college athletics. Everybody in the chat room loves the segment. We do, too. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You got it. Oh, by the way, here's one last one. The great Jim Simpson of ESPN and NBC fame, and that's him meeting my daughter, Tiffany, in my first year of calling games on ESPN. Vitale and Simpson came into a game at LSU right after I'd done my first games at ESPN. He came to my house for dinner, and there he is giving my wife a handshake, and he just hugged my daughter, Tiffany, who's now 41 years old. So
Do you still have that awesome suit?
Which one?
The one in the picture.
The one in the picture.
Oh, man. Oh, that's a sports coat that I can fit in now.
Are you serious? You know,
I've dropped 55 pounds since last year, you know, so yeah. Hey, that's 85 right now. Wow. So
that's vintage.
I haven't weighed 215 or 210. I'm down to, you know, I lost from 270 to 255 pounds. So
awesome.
I was able to do that. So,
awesome.
Yeah, it's got a little lint on it now, so I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, that's awesome. You can wear
it. Wear it. Yeah.
And the tones of Jim Simpson. That's awesome. And yours too, Tim. Thank you so much, buddy. Can't wait to talk to you again soon.
You got it. All thank the best, you. Fellas.
Tim bye Randall, bye. Fox Sports, with his opinions and also memories of many things when it comes to college sports and also March Madness.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.